It is strange the people God chooses in the Bible. When something must be done that's really important, that could make or break God's whole cosmic project of restoring shalom to all creation, why is it that God ends up depending on such a motley crew of sometimes shady characters? Makes you wonder who's running the HR department behind the pearly gates. Do they even think of running a background check? Now, sure, God's chosen people have their shining moments, and we appreciate them for their occasional acts of courage and self-sacrifice and humble service. But on the other hand, there are some really bizarre things going on in these stories. Just the fact that these stories made the cut in our holy scriptures ought to convince any skeptic of the Bible's authenticity. If the Bible was only a collection of religious propaganda, it would be mostly larger-than-life hero stories. There wouldn't be so many stories that make our religious ancestors look so flawed, so human, so much like, well, like us. Jacob is in focus this Sunday, and he, alongside his mother Rebecca, is portrayed as a deceiver, an outright liar. In order to get what he believes he has coming to him, the blessing of the firstborn. Well, lying for the purpose of self-enrichment seems to run in the blood of this holy family. Jacob got it honestly. He is the grandson of Abraham, who lied to a foreign king, saying his wife Sarah was his sister, so they would treat him well, which meant that his wife was claimed by the king and likely not treated well. And after the truth came to light, the king, in order to avoid any public shame, gave Abraham all kinds of privilege and wealth and protection. And many years later, lo and behold, Abraham's son Isaac does the very same thing with his wife Rebecca. Lies about their relationship, watches his wife get carried away, and then the king makes amends by giving him all kinds of privileges and access, and he gets so wealthy and powerful that the king asks Isaac to leave that land and go live somewhere else. I mention all this because there's a lot of backstory to this narrative that we heard today in Genesis 27 and 28. A lot of backstory and a lot of baggage. By necessity, we don't have the luxury of covering the whole narrative this fall, so we jump over large sections of the story, and even in this story, we jump over certain parts. Let me remind us of what we didn't read in this story about Jacob and Esau and their birthright. First of all, before they were even born, God spoke to Rebekah and gave her a prophecy: the older will serve the younger. And when the twin boys were born, Esau came out first, but Jacob was right behind and holding onto the heel of his older brother. Hebrew scholars point out that even Jacob's name points to deceit. Hebrew is a language of consonants, with the vowel sounds thrown in to alter the meaning of the word. So the same three Hebrew consonants that make the name Jacob also make a word meaning to come behind, or to supplant, or overreach. And the same three letters make the word for heel. So Jacob has come to mean heel grabber or supplanter. But setting aside Jacob for a moment, think about Rebekah. She had been lied about by her own husband and handed over to a king's harem. And according to Genesis 26:8, it was a long time later that the truth came to light. Perhaps we might be less harsh with Rebecca and the scheming and deceit that she helped mastermind. Yes, she developed the plan to have her favorite son, Jacob, trick Isaac into giving Jacob the blessing of the firstborn before Isaac had a chance to get it. When you consider the multi-generational practice of gain by deceit with the men in this family, and when you consider the years, perhaps, or at least many months, that Rebecca paid the price for being lied about by her husband, and when you consider she was only acting to help fulfill a prophecy that God had already given her, then maybe we could at least admire her for using her own strength and smarts and ingenuity to help God bring about God's plan for Jacob. In any case, Rebecca and Jacob do not stand alone in their deceit. This family system has a long, illustrious history of using morally suspect ways to help God bring about God's plans. And it plays out on the pages of Holy Scripture in some sad and tragic ways. Jacob and Esau become blood enemies. Jacob is forced to relocate far away, and Rebecca lives out her life separated from her favorite son. And Jacob's deceit comes back to bite him later when he gets similar treatment from his own father-in-law. At least that's how these stories are written down. Some argue that these stories were handed down orally for generations and served the purpose of explaining how things turned out in the end. Like how Jacob's descendants, the Israelites, dominated Esau's descendants, the Edomites. But this Jacob and Esau story, nevertheless, as it is written in Genesis, is part of the Torah that has shaped Jewish faith for all time and which continues to shape us. So, what is the gospel here? What do we gain from this story for our complicated and contemporary life? Obviously, the key elements here in this story are foreign to us. We lack reference points to understand an ancient patriarchal society where marital relationships were so transactional and economic, where the oldest son's birthright was all important and gave him power and control over his siblings. And maybe, if we think about it more, God's basic modus operandi hasn't changed all that much. Maybe God still looks to flawed people to carry out God's message and mission. Maybe God still has the same HR director who doesn't do background checks. Because otherwise, who of us would have been chosen? We all have checkered pasts, and a few skeletons in our family closets. I've come to the conclusion that God is a very patient God. Maybe more patient than we are. The group of local pastors who meet weekly to talk about these narrative lectionary texts include a Lutheran pastor from Mount Sydney, Derek Boggs, who asked a question of us a few weeks ago during our discussion of Jacob and Esau. He asked, "Do you think God intended to use all this lying and deceit to accomplish his will, or did God just roll with it?" Thank you, Derek, for inspiring my sermon title, "The People God Rolls With." Yes, actually, I think God did not design it to unfold in this way, but God rolled with it. God rolled with Jacob and his whole dysfunctional family, and God rolls with us. That is who God is. God has a primary motivation behind this whole project, and it is love. And love is not possible without free will. So God does everything possible to see that those purposes are fulfilled. Everything possible, that is. Coercing us to be in a relationship is the one thing that is impossible for God. Because to do so would betray God's core character of love. Brothers and sisters, we have disappointed God in the past, and we still disappoint God today. And I assure you, we will keep on disappointing God. We miss the mark. We also lie to ourselves and to others and sometimes to God. The good news is God rolls with it. God rolls with us. The will and purposes of God are persistent. They persist beyond our bumbling efforts to obey, even beyond our sometimes purposeful disobedience. And if that's the case with us, then let's also remind ourselves that God rolls with other people too, including those we'd rather God didn't roll with. As I said, God is more patient than we are. We look around and we see dysfunction everywhere. A dysfunctional political system, a dysfunctional widening gap between the rich and the poor, a dysfunctional society filled by selfishness and white supremacy and all kinds of other evils. And of course, dysfunction in our own churches and neighborhoods and families. We may well be tempted to throw in the towel. This cannot be fixed. But what is God's response? God rolls with us. Now, this does not mean that God approves of our dysfunction or blesses it. God hates injustice. God does not turn a blind eye or ignore the evils that we perpetrate on each other. God lets the consequences play out. Just as God let Jacob and his beloved mother remain cut off from each other and let anger and hatred fester for years between those twin boys. Even as these consequences are playing out, God keeps showing up again and again, looking for a little receptivity. That's what happened to Jacob in the latter part of today's story. Jacob's ladder. Jacob's dream in the desert during a 500-mile journey to escape the anger and death wish of his twin brother. He dreamed of a ladder stretching to heaven with angels going up and down, and God stood at the top and spoke to Jacob, assured Jacob that the promise still applied to him. Despite the fix he was in, despite his broken family, despite everything, "I'm still with you, Jacob. I'm still rolling with you. The takeaway for us seems to be God will not reject us or refuse to work with us whenever we do open ourselves even slightly to doing God's work and will. If God can roll with the likes of Jacob and Isaac and Abraham, maybe God can roll with some people today who call themselves Christian, but whose values are so at odds with mine. When I take into account the people God rolls with, I am moved to gratitude and compassion. Gratitude for God's grace extended to me, and compassion for those I am tempted to despise.